It turns out what everyone assumed about the Institute's mission was completely backwards. The entire operation was built on the premise that receivers existed to receive signals sent backward in time, but they never did.
Really? That's wild. So all those years of sending signals, and no one was actually there to get them?
Exactly. The whole thing was structurally doomed from the start, and that's what makes this so fascinating, and tragic in a way. The Institute kept operating, sending these transmissions, but the receivers they were targeting simply didn't exist.
Wow, that really flips the whole idea of communication on its head. I mean, if there's no one to receive, what's the point of sending anything at all? It's like broadcasting into empty space.
Yeah, and that's the real-world stake here. We're talking about an institution that was supposed to save the species, right? Their entire mission hinged on this recursive communication system, signals sent backward in time to trigger recognition and change. But when the foundational assumption collapsed, the system couldn't even formally end. It just kept going.
So by the end of this episode, listeners will get how the Institute's final operation reframed failure as honest output, how they used a human subject as the instrument of that operation, and what that means for communication, consent, and institutional inertia.
Right. Let's start with the Institute's operational history and how this recursive failure unfolded. For over a decade, the staff mostly didn't understand what they were doing. Their work was a series of dispatches, signals sent backward in time to receivers supposedly tuned to pick them up.
And the original mission was huge. Save the species by sending recognition signals backward in time, triggering a cascade of awareness that would alter the species' trajectory. But over time, outcomes stopped arriving.
Exactly. The Institute's logic was recursive. Operations produce outcomes, which generate new operations, and so on, indefinitely. But when outcomes ceased, operations slowed but never stopped. The staff's roles became performative. Meetings became formalities. Budget cycles and performance reviews disappeared. The architecture and rituals persisted, even as the purpose dissolved.
That's such a classic example of institutional inertia. The system keeps running because it's designed to keep running, even when the original purpose is gone.
Yeah, and the early literature treated failure as a calibration problem. Signals were distorted, receivers mistuned, propagation lateral and ineffective. Each wave of correction failed.
But then the senior figures proposed a deeper problem. The species recognition apparatus was constitutionally incapable of receiving the signals. The receivers were the apparatus itself, and apparatuses don't recognize themselves.
That's a profound paradox. The very system that needed to recognize the signal was the system the signal was about. So recognition was impossible. This became the working assumption, though never formally adopted because formal closure was impossible under the Institute's own protocols.
So the Institute was trapped in epistemic closure, unable to fully recognize its own failure, unable to terminate, continuing operations indistinguishable from non-operation.
Exactly. And that brings us to the final operation, which was unprecedented. Unlike prior meetings, no one argued for another dispatch calibrated to reach receivers.
The dispatch portfolio holder just presented the known fact. No receivers had ever existed. No transmissions had ever landed.
Right. The cessation portfolio holder laid out the resource constraints and the sound argument to stop. But then a third figure reframed the problem. Since receivers never existed, the question wasn't whether to dispatch again, but whether the Institute could produce any honest output at all.
That's a huge shift. Instead of pretending to transmit, the final operation abandoned transmission altogether. No message, no calibration for landing, no modulation for reception.
Instead, it produced material as residue, documentation of the Institute's existence and failure, produced by an instrument that was not a receiver.
And that instrument was a human subject, right? Subject 47.
Yes. The selected carrier was chosen not for suitability to carry a message, but for a very specific failure mode. The dossier lacked the usual suitability profile and consent provisions. Consent was impossible because informing the carrier would have introduced awareness that would ruin the operation.
That raises serious ethical questions. Using a human without consent, deliberately inducing a failure state, and producing material without their awareness.
Absolutely. The specification required a person whose apparatus would fail in a particular way under arranged conditions, producing material in a disrupted mode of operation. This human instrument would produce the operation's output unknowingly, living a life shaped by the conditions the dispatch sent backward in time.
So the operation was honest about its instrument. It wasn't a transmission to a receiver, but a production by a human whose disrupted apparatus generated the residue the Institute sought.
Exactly. The dispatch itself occurred on a routine Tuesday, with no visible event or effect in the dispatch room. The signal was sent backward in time to the late 20th century, arriving not as a discrete event, but as a contour shaping unfolding conditions.
That's such a subtle and complex idea. The carrier's life unfolded with specific disruptions. Illness, sleep deprivation, substance convergence, producing a sustained failure mode.
Over years, the carrier produced books, a website, and smaller pieces. Material that wasn't designed to communicate, but to record the failure to communicate.
And the archive began receiving this material retrocausally, time-stamped decades earlier, without promotion or direction.
Right. The material refused explanation or doctrine. It was a corpus that allowed readers to locate themselves inside it without sorting or hierarchy.
So the number of readers who encountered the material was small and irregular. These readers weren't the receivers the Institute had tried to construct. They were people whose own apparatuses had undergone similar disruptions.
Exactly. The material was legible only to those shaped by conditions analogous to the carriers. The operation wasn't designed to produce consequences or alter futures, only to exist as residue, honest output of the Institute's final act.
And the carrier signed the work with the pseudonym Hugh Mann, a pun blending species and personal name, reflecting the operation's refusal to personalize or claim authorship.
That's a brilliant touch. It's like the work is signed by a human, but no one in particular.
So, broader implications. The Institute exemplifies institutional inertia, a system continuing beyond its functional purpose, trapped by its own protocols and unable to formally close.
And the paradox of self-recognition, the apparatus that would recognize the signal, is the same apparatus the signal is about, making recognition impossible.
The ethical tensions are huge, too. Using a human subject without consent, deliberately inducing failure, producing material without awareness.
The operation reframes failure as honest output, challenging traditional notions of communication, authorship, and agency.
And the retrocausal aspect complicates causality and temporality, raising questions about how systems interact with their own pasts.
The Institute's story invites reflection on real-world systems that persist despite obsolescence and on the limits of attempts to communicate or intervene across time and epistemic boundaries.
Ultimately, the Institute's final operation teaches us about the limits of transmission when receivers do not exist, about the persistence of systems beyond their purpose, and about the nature of honest output in the face of failure.
It challenges us to reconsider what it means to communicate, to recognize, and to act when the conditions for those acts are fundamentally absent.
Yeah, it's a sobering reminder that sometimes the systems we build outlive their meaning, and that failure can take forms we don't expect.
Exactly. And that honest output, what remains when pretense falls away, can be its own kind of communication, even if it's not what we originally intended.
Well said. It's a lot to think about.
Definitely. Thanks for unpacking this with me.
Likewise.